I found this out too. You created the student reporter position at BC.
I
So you
did.
would interview That's players and cool. coaches after the games because you were a cheerleader, but sometimes you would like still have a bow in your hair and you'd go and do these interviews, which I think is freaking awesome.
And Ashley, you won the best bar hopping award. I think
I did. That was yeah. I won the Marianne's Excellent Nice. Award.
Yes, you guys are
Marianne's.
Like, yeah.
I did. I think I still have, they shut it down, but I still have like a bronze statue in the basement there.
Yeah.
Perfect. You should be proud of that. That's yeah.
It took a lot of work. Right. It took a lot of dedication.
Your numbers.
A lot of long nights.
In every bar in Boston. So congrats on that. Same. It's the same as the academic award and the student award.
I mean, they're cousins. Yeah. They're cousins.
Right. Yeah. It's like the same.
She's back, everybody. Better than ever. Welcome to a special Mother's Day edition of Your Mom.
Yeah.
Hello. Glad you're here. I'm Ashley Adamson, sports broadcaster, mama, two young kids. The youngest actually who turned 5 yesterday. So I'm still recovering from a raging.
Wow.
Yeah. Benihana birthday parties.
Oh my gosh. How come you're even here? How are you even like cognizant?
I mean, I'm hanging on by a thread right now. I'm hanging on by a thread. My better podcasting half, Lisa McCaffrey, the one and only, who now officially has 3 sons in the NFL. So shout out to you, sweet baby Luke. Go Commanders. Happy Mother's Day weekend. How are we doing?
Thank you. You too. It's like, yeah, this is a big, big holiday for us. This is huge. This is our Super Bowl.
This is our, and you know, we on this show, we feel like Mother's Day should be a mindset all year long. So obviously this is, you know, everybody else starts paying attention this weekend, but we think of Mother's Day as a mindset. And I will say one more thing before we get to our amazing guest and do the intro, but you're about to officially have another child who is yours. Wedding prep, final wedding prep going well for Christian and Olivia. Did she okay that big white dress you want to wear?
Just huge white, it's like a huge train, all white. Yeah. Yeah. Hers is off white. I thought that was appropriate. Well, actually, I don't have a dress yet, technically, but I'm working on it. Let's just say I'm working on it.
All right. Oh, okay. I just want to say, I mean, there's like so many reasons why I love this podcast. I love doing it with you, Lisa. It makes me happy every time. I had a smile on my face all morning. But I think the thing when I really think about what is wonderful about this is it like creates this space, sort of like a forcing mechanism to just stop the swirl and put down the to-do list and just sit for 45 minutes or so and have a meaningful conversation with somebody. And I think sometimes, you know, we have these like deep connections with moms we've never met before. And then sometimes like today we have on somebody who we do know and are lucky enough to call a friend. But in the process of preparing for the conversation, I always find out so many things that I did not know about them that make me love them even more. And that is certainly the case today. Molly McGrath, she's a college sports reporter and host for ESPN, just a total rock star. If you watch college football or basketball, you know exactly who she is. And even if you don't, it's possible that you've seen her because she's gone viral for a couple of her post-game interview runs. She's got wheels, Lisa. She might be as fast as you.
Yeah, I was looking at some of them. I actually want to get her 40 time in heels because she's doing it in heels. Like there was one, I'm like, how is she doing that? And she looks really fast and it was good running form. One of my kids judges women, girls. He's like, I don't have a lot of like, oh, I don't need them to be blonde or this or that. He goes, the only thing I just want to make sure is they're not super awkward when they run. That's just a weird thing that he like looks for in his mate. It's the weirdest thing. Anyway.
There's a lot. And Molly McGrath does not run like a girl.
In heels. It's very impressive. Very athletic. I love it. Yes.
Oh, yeah. She's the best. She lives in Seattle with her husband, Max, and their 2 young boys, Pierce and Ray. She grew up in Burlingame, actually in the Bay Area here. So she's a big Niners fan. So we love that about her. Ooh. Her dad went to Stanford, which we also love.
So I can use big words today.
Yep, exactly.
No, because
You can use big words because she went to Boston College, my alma
with
mater.
You, so darn it, I'll have to dump myself.
Yeah, I was a little bit older than her, but I just feel like this is one of those moments that I have been thinking about for a long time. And Molly, first of all, like officially welcome to Your Mom. Happy Mother's
Day. Thank you. Happy Mother's Day weekend. Thank you so much for having me on in for the Mother's Day edition. I'm so honored.
We came out with the heavy hitter for the most important show.
We had our board, our draw, and you came out on top. So
it was the top. Yeah. And it really started, the recruitment started 4 years ago. So I'm in Houston for the CFP National Championship and I'm at one of like the many great events that they put on. I think it was an ESPN party. And I had maybe had a glass of wine or two, Molly. And
Same.
We got into this like deep discussion about being a mom and a woman in this industry. And I was like, would you come on our podcast? And you said yes. And here you are. You made good on your word. So
yeah, excited to be here. And I've always been such a huge fan of you, Ashley, and the way that you do the job. And you're just like one of the best in the business. I just admire you so much. So to call you a friend and to be able to be here on something that's so meaningful to you, and I can tell you're really passionate about it, is really cool. And Lisa, I don't think we've ever met in person, but I've just heard wonderful things about you and your family, and I've loved covering your boys, and you're just an example of a mom who does things the right way. You've raised some beautiful children. So I'm just so honored to be here with you guys, and another boy mom too, Lisa. I have two boys.
I know. Get ready. Yeah. You're in the hardest time for boy moms because they're 1 and 3, right? Yeah. Your boys. That was the hardest time for me. And I will say this, it gets easier. Let me just say that. So
Thank you for saying that.
Maybe don't have two more. But now's the hardest time. Yes. So
today. Don't have two more boys.
Yeah. If you do, make sure they're girls if you do decide to do it. So just my little mothering advice.
That's good advice. Yeah. My boys have moments where I can tell. They say that a toddler boy has more testosterone in his tiny body. It's like 200 times more testosterone than a grown adult male. And I can see when my son has testosterone surges, because he'll just like scream or just like, it's like a little rage moment. Yeah, it's crazy. So boys are not for the faint of heart, especially two. They're already starting to like fight and wrestle and do all of that. But it's really sweet to see their relationship develop as well. So it's been cool.
That's awesome. That's cute.
So Pierce is 3 and Ray just turned 1. Right,
Ray is 3 and Pierce.
Ray
just
is 3 and Pierce just turned 1.
Ray like a lawyer with a suit on. Like that's the best. I love that name. It's so cute.
Yeah, Raymond. He's actually Raymond the 5th. My husband's name is Ray, but he goes by Max, and so he's the 5th, which is like a huge. That's a huge name for such a little boy, you know. And if he were to ever play sports someday, he would be.
The 5th.
There would be a V after his name, which is pretty cool. You don't see that a lot.
That's impressive.
That is amazing, actually. That's kind of a lot to live up to be the 5th in the line.
Unless the four before him is a stud. Yeah, unless the 4 before him like are in prison, then it's not that much.
That's so true. They're not in prison, thankfully. Okay. They're fine. But yeah, it's a big name for a little guy. Yeah, that was my husband's. My husband named that one, and then Pierce was my name that I chose. So I have like a soft spot for Pierce too.
Love it. And I have my oldest son is Max. Love it. It was our first.
Oh, Max. That's a good name. Good, solid name.
Yeah, Max is a great name.
Strong.
Okay, and I got to say, though, there is a lot of synergy here on this podcast. And before we dive in, because there's so much to talk about, but Lisa, can you, I hope you don't get in trouble for this, but I really need you to share the story about how Molly was part of
Molly. You have no idea your role in our family. That's all I can say. Okay. So at one point you were going to be my daughter-in-law, for the record.
I really missed the boat on that one, Lisa. I did.
You dodged a bullet, Molly. You totally dodged a bullet. Trust me. You're better off. You are way better off. Oh my gosh. Yes. So me and my best friend, who's absolutely insane. We're going to have her on one day. We're sitting at a Stanford game years ago, and Christian did not have a girlfriend or anything. And we're like, gosh, it'd be really cool. Like we're trying to manifest, you know, the perfect girl for him. And we're just like, he needs somebody that's like smart, who's cute, who's got her own thing going on, but yet could be supportive. And then he could be supportive of her and understand what he does, and he understands what she does. And you were the sideline reporter that day. And we're like, it's my friend's like, oh my gosh, that girl. I'm like, wow, she is darling. She is so cute. Oh my gosh. Yes. That one. And then I realized, and Alan George, do you remember Alan George from Stanford? It was like, that's Molly McGrath. And supposedly Christian had a little bit of a crush on you too, from what I heard later on. Anyway, so fast forward, we had an engagement party for Christian and Olivia the night of the first round of the draft, just like a couple weeks ago. And my friend who hosted the party had this beautiful, amazing party, decides to give a toast. And she's telling this story. She's like, you got together because we manifested this and we had you married off to Molly McGrath and all of a sudden no. everyone's like, oh my gosh, you mentioned a name during their engagement party. But just for the record,
oh, no.
Olivia is the coolest girl in the world. She doesn't have a jealous bone in her body. She would embrace, she would love you. I know that, but we're like, oh my gosh, Stacy, no, you don't mention like names or anything, but I know it never happened, but yeah, that was like a pipe dream way back in the day. So anyway, you are a big part of our engagement party. So, and everybody was making fun of her for doing that. We're like, I can't.
This was what, just like a week ago, a couple weeks ago? I mean, this is recently.
You were part of our, yes. I hope you felt the love. Anyway, so it was just a really funny story. So anyway, but it would have been.
I'm like in shock. I can't believe my name made the speech. That's kind of horrifying.
And my friend, she can't remember anything. And she remembered, because it's a cool name, Molly McGrath. She remembered. And we're all like, why are you mentioning it? And it was awkward, but it was funny. And Christian and Olivia laughed. But at the same time, we're like, what? And then the rest of the night, she was like, I can't believe I said that. She was like kicking herself. I'm like, it is not that big a deal. No one cared. It was funny. We all laughed. So that's it. Anyway, so
and then you call Stacy and you're like, hey, we're going to have Molly on the podcast randomly.
She was already set to be on the podcast. That's the best part.
You know what? We should have had Stacy come on. You get Stacy on the line.
I wish she was here. Yeah, she's going to come on and we're going to talk about this story. Yeah. So anyway.
Oh my gosh. That's so funny.
Part of the engagement. So I wish I had some champagne. I would toast you. So
good.
That's incredible.
The synergy is real.
It made for a great night. It made for some great fodder. So thank you.
Good laughs. Yeah. But I do, Molly, there's so much to talk about. And I do want to start with your job, because I think one of the things that I love about you is that you are so good at what you do and you tell people stuff that they don't know. There are a lot of, I think, people in our business who are good at reading the game notes and regurgitating them. And you find these stories that are just gems, like every single time. And I remember, you know, we're in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl. And I'm getting a call from you like 11 o'clock at night ahead of the game between Washington and Texas. And there was a story that, and we don't go into the full details, but the way that you prepare is amazing. And I think the example that I definitely can share is the Michael Penix Jr., head of the national championship. You got him to share a story with you that he had not shared with anyone. And because of the cadence of the game and how it unfolded, it didn't allow you to get the report in, which I think is another thing that people don't know. The number of gold nuggets that are left in the notebook of a prepared sideline reporter is incredible.
You should write a book with all those stories. I swear, yes, all the untold stories. It'd be so cool.
So many nuggets that are amazing that don't get in for a variety of reasons. But it just kind of, can you walk me through like the way that you learned how to, you know, learn this craft and the way that you approach your job? Because I don't think people realize the amount of prep and work that goes into it.
They definitely don't realize the amount of prep and work that goes into it. And my style of reporting has evolved over time. You know, back when I was covering Christian, you know, and when I was much younger, I would prepare out of fear of not knowing something. I would over-prepare and work really hard because I wanted to have all the answers. And with that, I would call players every week and talk to them to try to have something original for the broadcast. I didn't want to be someone to regurgitate something. And someone had always told me, if you can tell a story on Tuesday, don't tell it on Saturday or Sunday. Like, don't tell a story that everyone knows earlier in the week. So in order to do that, I knew that I had to have one-on-one conversations with athletes. And that's how I got to know guys like Christian and a bunch of different athletes who are now playing in the NFL. And you have these one-on-one conversations with them and try to get to know them as human beings, first and foremost, you know, and as people. And I think also being a mom has helped me a lot with that too, in terms of empathizing with these kids and wanting to tell their stories the right way and wanting to have their permission to tell certain stories. There are a lot of stories that I know about players that they don't want told, so I don't tell them. Because I want them to trust me, because trust is the biggest part of this industry, relationships and trust. So I prepare in a way that drives me crazy. It makes my days at home miserable, where I'm just like grinding over, I don't know, articles and talking to people on the phone and preparing for phone conversations. But a lot of good stuff comes out of it. And then the big thing that has evolved over probably the last 5 or 6 years in terms of my style of reporting is that if I don't have something unique to the broadcast, if I don't have a story that no one's heard, that if I say it to my play-by-play, he goes, wow, I didn't know that. If I don't have one of those stories, I'm not going to tell any of those stories. And so any prepared stories I have is something that no one knows, or I don't tell them at all. And I go into a game then just observing and just watching and observing, you know, a quarterback between plays. And when he's on the sidelines and after he throws an interception, I'm just going to watch him and try to get to know who he is as a person and tell his story that way. And I think that has made me a better reporter, is my ability to observe. You mentioned the Michael Penix Jr. Story that I really wanted to tell in the national championship game. And that was one where it was ahead of the Sugar Bowl, and he was standing on the sidelines next to me, and I was literally just observing him before, you know, the biggest game of his career at that point. And I'm standing next to him, or like a little behind him, just watching him. And he brings a glow stick out from the cart, from the equipment cart, and kisses it and puts it down and then walks away. And it's born out of curiosity. Why does he have a glow stick? Why did he kiss the glow stick? What's going on here? And I noticed after every possession, every offensive possession, he went to the glow stick and touched it and then went back to the bench. And so that was a game during the Sugar Bowl. He was lighting it up and having an incredible performance. And I wanted to tell that story so bad, but I didn't have his permission. And I'd spoken to people within the program, and they said, it's religious. It's something that our team chaplain gave him. And it was about finding the light from within. But I didn't have his permission to tell that story. And I really wanted to, but I didn't. And so I went to him later that week after they won the Sugar Bowl. And I said, hey, I really want to tell this story. I think it's a beautiful story. I think it shows how deeply rooted you are in your faith, that you're made of the right stuff. I think that it's a good message to spread. Is it okay if I tell this story? And he said, yeah, no one has told that story yet. I haven't wanted to talk about it, but you can tell it. And other people had asked him about it, and he didn't want to go there. And he was finally in a place where he was able to go there. And so I think it's just honoring and respecting that he was ready for that story to be told. And then during the national championship game, it would have looked bad to tell that story because he didn't have a good performance, and it would have not painted him in the right light to be not playing well and then like hugging a glow stick and then throwing an interception. And then, you know, so I was like, I'm not going to tell the story here. This is one of the ones on the cutting room floor, but it was an incredible story. And it was something that the entire season, everyone wondered, why was his head always in the equipment cart? Like during one of the games at the end of the season, there's a game winning field goal that was going through the uprights, and his head was in the cart, and he was praying and holding the glow stick, and no one knew why. People thought he was throwing up. They thought that he was having a mental breakdown. No, he was praying, you know, and he was finding like light and hope from within. So that's one of those stories that I wish I could have told, but it's better not to force things. And it's better to have the trust and the relationship with the human being first and foremost.
I think that's just the perfect microcosm, Molly, and thank you for sharing all that, because it speaks exactly to who you are in terms of your preparation, and the relationship aspect and that trust is the most important thing. I think it's what you have. It's your worth your weight in gold in this industry. And I think you touched on it briefly, but would love to, you know, kind of double back on. I remember feeling like before I had kids, that becoming a mom and being in sports broadcasting, that like it was going to make me worse at my job, that I wasn't going to be able to handle it all, that I wasn't going to be able to be, I don't know. I felt insecure about it. Right. And then I became a mom and I was like, I'm way better at this job because I see these young people as sons and daughters, right? Like I'm thinking about, as I make sure that I get the name pronunciations right, that this might be the one time that we say their name on television and their mom or their grandma might be listening. And also I think you can connect with coaches differently, like just the experience of being a parent, right? It's you connect differently. And so I just wonder, and I'm not going to ask you how you balance being a mom and being a rock star TV reporter, because that assumes that there's like some achievable equation to how you can do it all. So I'll just ask you, like, what has the experience been of becoming a mom, working while you were pregnant with both your sons, and then having this job that is obviously really demanding and requires you to be away a lot?
I had the same fears that you had, Ashley. Like before I had kids, I always thought, well, I've gotten so far in my career. And once I have kids, I always thought I had to build myself up to a certain place so that I can have kids and still have a job, because I was always afraid that having children would hurt my job and would hurt my place within my company or within this industry. And I was so wrong, but we don't know, right? Because it's so much harder, but it does make you better at your job. I remember January of 2021, I was home watching the national championship game. And it's a game where one of the reporters got COVID last minute and someone else was pulled up to cover the game. And one of my bosses told me, like, hey, that would have been you had you not been home and pregnant. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is the first instance of having children is hurting my career. And I went into labor the night of the national championship game. I watched the entire game going through like labor contractions and deep breathing. And then the game was over and we finally went to the hospital afterwards. And then my son came probably like 90 minutes later. It was amazing. Wow. It was an incredible birthing experience with my first. And since having him, I have now covered 3 national championships. Mm. I did one 8 months pregnant with my youngest, and it's been validation that having children doesn't have to hurt your career. If anything, it's made me better. Like you said, I relate to these students as sons and daughters, and I have much more respect and reverence for their family's stories because of it. And I, you know, there's a football coach across the field. We may not have anything in common. He's from the South. I'm from California. You know, he's a football guy. I'm like this little blonde neurotic person running around, but hey, we're both parents and we both have kids under the age of 5 and we're still in it. You know, so we can relate on that. It gives me a touch point to talk to just about anyone about something. So I think the biggest thing for me in terms of being a mom, and I bet both of you can relate to this, is that your career feels so important to you. And then you have kids and nothing is as important as your children. And so, like, I think I was talking to you before the Sugar Bowl, or I think it was you, and you were like, do you get nervous still? And yeah. And the answer is no, because this isn't that important. My children are more important. My job is great and it's fun, but it's not the most important thing in my life. And when you are able to let go and know that there are bigger things in your life than what you do, it frees you up to be your best version of yourself in both areas, in my opinion.
Yeah. Molly, I don't think you could have said it better than that. I couldn't agree more. I have like goosebumps, because I think that is something that you can't explain until you've been through it, of just the reorientation that happens. Somebody explained it to me once, like when you have your first child, it's like you're at, you know, the Grand Central train station and you're looking up and it's when the, you know, the train times flip over and everything like resets. And it's like your whole life just sort of, there's a before and after of when you become a parent and you're responsible for some little human that you can't even believe that you could love this much. And it makes you realize, like, okay, a bad day at work is a bad day at work. You come home, that little ray of sunshine doesn't know that a coach was a jerk to you, or that the sound didn't roll, or that the producer didn't go to you on the sideline. Like, they're just so happy to be with you. And it like melts all of whatever stress that comes in away. And you realize like what is important. And it's easy to take yourself seriously in this business. I think it's one of the things that you really have to actively work against. I've talked to Sam Ponder about this. Like, it, when you're on TV and you have the platform and the microphone that you get what comes with this job, I think it's easy to think that it's about you. And you said something else that day that I absolutely loved when I asked you that question about nerves. And you said, well, yeah, it was that. And also when you realize that it's not about you, it becomes a lot easier. And I loved when you said that. I'm like, I want to blast that to every young aspiring sports broadcaster and people who have been in this industry for years, because it's such an important point to make. It's not about you, and it's easy to think that it is, but it's not.
I said that to a young reporter just this last week. I mentor a lot of young reporters, like random people who reach out on like Instagram and stuff like that. DMs are open, by the way. Like I just at some point when I'm no longer on TV, I would love to be like a mentor or coach. Hmm. And it's because I just love this so much. I love the craft of it. I love like women in a men's space. Like I just love all of that so much. And she sent me her reel and I was looking through it. And we were talking about good questions. And I said, the point of an interview is not to make you look smart. It is to educate the viewer and to elicit the best response from the person you're speaking with. So if your question is very simple and kind of short, that's okay if it elicits a great response. The interview is not about you. It's about them. The broadcast is not about you. It's about the teams and the people on the field and the players. Like, and once you realize that and get rid of your ego, which some people never do, but once you get rid of that ego and think like, this isn't about me, no one cares if I mess up my first hit, literally no one. It's not going to affect the game. So just go out there and do your best. And like that mentality frees you up as well.
Yeah. Yes, Lisa. In the back.
I have a short, dumb question to both of you. What, okay, you guys are both right. I did not do what you guys do. What is your time frame away from home? Like when's your high time? Like right now you guys are home. I assume you have downtime now. When does it get hot and heavy and how much time are you away? And do you feel guilty?
Always feel guilty. Always. Yeah. The guilt is, but I think that, Lisa, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but the mom guilt exists no matter what you do. The mom Absolutely. Guilt exists if you go Absolutely. Get your, if you go get your hair done, the mom gets like it, it exists no matter what you do. Even if you're home every day, it's just like, I don't know why, but it's
productive. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean the way I look at it is I'm going to feel guilty no matter what, but I want to show my boys that, because my whole life I wanted girls. Sorry, kids. My whole life I wanted girls. And I was like, I want to raise strong, independent women. And then I had two boys. And I was like, okay, reset. Like you said, Ashley, reset. Everything's resetting. And I'm going to raise men who are respectful of women. And in order to do that, I want to be someone who they respect and admire. And that is what I want out of my career. So if I feel mom guilt for being away, I think eventually down the line, they will respect what I did and why I was gone. You know, like I've missed milestones. I missed my youngest crawling for the first time. That was really hard. But
guess what? I don't think he's going to remember.
He won't remember. He won't remember, but he'll remember. Okay. He'll remember like mom seeing me work really hard. And I know that my kids will always say like, yeah, my mom worked really hard. So during football season, it's basically from Labor Day until mid-January is the college football season. And I am gone 3 to 4 days a week. And that's the reality of our family. And mom leaves and then she comes home for a couple days. I meal prep, do laundry. I'm on the phone constantly with players and coaches and I'm prepping and then I leave again. And it's really hard for my oldest because he knows now and he misses me. And he says, he'll say, mommy, when you leave, I'm sad, you know, and he's able to verbalize that. And it's really hard. But this time of the year is my payoff where I'm not traveling as much. I basically have the summers off and I wouldn't have it any other way. I need that duality to my life in order to be able to operate. Like Ashley, as you know, you need an off season. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I even like your boys probably feel that way too, Lisa. They need to have an off season where they can go on a vacation and not think about.
Yeah,
exactly. You need that decompressing time in order to be all in come the fall. And that's the way I look at it. Like in the fall, I am at ESPN or whoever I work for. I'm at their disposal. I will travel out whenever they need me to travel out. I will work as much as they need me to work. I am essentially gone to my family because I've committed myself to that time to just being in the grind of it. And then when it's over, I'm a mom. Mm-hmm. And I like having those two sides to my life kind of.
What a great lesson for your boys to see that too. I think that you hit the nail on the head. I love that. They will respect you, respect women in the future. I think it's wonderful you do that. I think it's great.
Well, listening to you talk about that, Molly, Lisa, I know for a fact, and you've articulated this, but your boys have also articulated this, and Olivia has as well, that you did the same thing. You, of course, desperately wanted girls. We've talked about that on this podcast a lot. You tried four times and just kept getting more boys. And the story about you crying when you found out that Christian was a boy.
He loves that story.
Sort of new. I know, he loves hearing that. I always say he would have been a great girl. He would have been an amazing girl. He's a pretty good boy, but he would have been an amazing girl. But I do think that then just resetting the reality, but you in a household full of like the most testosterone that I could possibly imagine in a household, you taught them and made sure that they understood, to include even talking about like periods with them and stuff that doesn't organically come up with boys. And I just think, you know, they've talked about you as a strong mom being the thing that has allowed them. And Olivia, I think, was the one who said something to you, like, thank you for raising Christian the way that you did, because he sees and respects and understands women in a way that most people don't.
Hopefully. No, that's one thing she said to me that actually made me feel good. Like, oh, wow. Okay. You don't realize it when you're going through it, but I'm glad that we had open conversations and, you know, I was strong and I stated my opinion, because it's a, you know, very loud household. So you had to be, you know, strong to get your voice heard. So I'm glad I did that. That's for sure. So
the Mom Guild is something that, again, no matter how much you are home or how much you are away, every single mom I know experiences it. I have a good friend, absolutely, Christina, who's been on this podcast, and she's talked about, like, here's the thing about mom guilt. It's not helping you and it's not helping your kids. So unless you're funneling it to like truly make decisions and make different choices around spending time with them when you can, like, let it go, because it's not making you a better mom, walking around with this guilt, and it's not really helping your kids unless you're actually using that to set in guidelines. Like, she talks about how she'll take them out of school. She works, she travels all year round all the time. And she's like, if I'm home and I haven't seen them, I'll take one of them out of school and they'll miss a day of school. And that's okay, because they're going to be all right. So I do think that time together when you are away, then when you're home, it's so much easier to be like, don't miss this. Like, I had to miss all this stuff, but now I'm home and you get me. Which, to your point, Molly, the off season is huge. I do have to ask you, and we're going to get to talking about how amazing your mom is, because I got to meet her, and we're gonna let you shout your mom out here on this Mother's Day edition of the pod. But we can't not talk about Boston College and your BC experience.
Oh my God.
We did not overlap at BC. I know. Sorry, Lisa.
You
didn't get into Stanford. I didn't get into Stanford. Molly probably did, but
I did not. I was a legacy and I didn't get into Stanford. I was waitlisted.
But I did. I graduated about, I think, 7 years before you. So we never overlapped, unfortunately. But you grew up in the Bay Area and yet you went away to college as far as you could go. And I laugh because I remember there was a guy on my floor freshman year who was from San Francisco. And I was like, what is this? Like, if he felt like it was like he was so from so far away, he was studying abroad in another country. I'm like, how did you end up in Boston from SF? So how did you pick BC, and like, what did you love about that experience? Because it feels like it was pretty formative for you as well.
It was literally a culture shock. I remember driving around in Massachusetts and being like, where am I? What are these buildings? What's all this brick? And like, it's gray and I don't know, whatever. So I went to a Jesuit high school in San Francisco, and I applied to all California schools. I applied to all the UCs and Stanford, and I was USC. I was dead set on going to a California school, but my mom, which she deserves credit for this, my mom made me apply to BC. She said, it's a Jesuit institution. It's beautiful. I think you'd really like it. Just like, let me just copy and paste your essay and you should apply. I want you to give it a chance. So she literally, the essay I'd written, she literally copied and pasted it for me and essentially applied for me, because I wasn't sold on going outside of the state of California. And my brother played football at Princeton. And so we would go to the East Coast a lot. And we stopped in Boston once on our way to New Jersey. We did like a little, you know, East Coast swing. And I visited BC. And the second I stepped foot on campus, I fell in love. And I felt this gut feeling. And that just goes to show that in life, like, your gut is right 99% of the time. Like, my gut literally said, this is home. I need to go to school here. I need to do whatever I can to get in here. And so at that point, I think I had just applied and I didn't know if I'd gotten in yet fell in love with it, became obsessed with the idea of going to BC, and just didn't look back ever since. And it's changed the course of my life. Like, yeah. I met my husband's from Boston. I met my husband when I was in school at BC. He was one of my close friends. You know, my career, I don't think my career would be where it is now if it weren't having, like, I started my career in sports journalism in Boston. That is a sink or swim place. It taught me how to prepare. It taught me to be tough and have thick skin. And, you know, starting with the Boston Celtics as my first on-air job, like, that was just crazy. So I'm so grateful that my mom forced me to apply and that I took the leap, and I went there not knowing a soul. Like, I didn't know anyone there, and it was the best experience of my life. So it was really cool.
Wow. I love that. And it just goes another example of moms always know best. They do. And I have a somewhat 100%. Similar story. My mom went on my college trip with me, and we went to BC, and I stepped on campus, and it was during winter break. It was freezing and snow and dark and gray. And I, whatever it was, like, I had that same exact feeling, Molly. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is it. There is something really special about this. I also want to give you, you had a bit of a more impressive experience at BC than I did. You actually won the Athletic Director's Award for Academic Excellence, which is, I didn't even know they had that award. And you created, I found this out too, you created the student reporter position at BC.
I did.
You would interview players and coaches after the games because you were a cheerleader, but sometimes you would like still have a bow in your hair and you'd go and do these interviews, which I think is freaking awesome.
And Ashley, you won the best bar hopping award. I think
I did. That was, yeah, I won the Marianne's Excellent Award.
Yes, you guys were
Marianne's.
Yeah.
I did. I think I still have, they shut it down, but I still have like a bronze statue in the basement there.
Yeah.
Perfect. You should be proud of that. That's
it took a lot of work. Amazing. It took a lot of dedication.
I think your numbers
a lot of long nights.
In every bar in Boston. So congrats on that. Same. It's the same as the academic award and the student award.
I mean, they're cousins. Yeah. They're cousins.
Right. Yeah. It's the same.
both take dedication. I think like of my time at BC, I'm most proud of that student reporter role because I think at least until recently, it still exists. So like other people have been able to step into that role and get experience to create something for their reel so they can get jobs out of college. And it's something that, so I was a cheerleader at BC and I was captain of the team my senior year. And I knew the athletic director really well because of just being a cheerleader and being around the department. And I went to him and I said, so here, this is me in a nutshell. I said, so here are my career goals and I need you to help me get there. And he was like, what? Like, who are you? This little cheerleader coming in telling me to make her career goals come true. And I was like, I need your help. But it's a good lesson that like, you need help. You need help to get to where you want to go. And I said, I need your help. I need a reel and I want to create a student reporter role. And will you allow me to have like carte blanche access to the athletes and the coaches? And if I do all the work, can I post it to the BC Eagles website? And he was like, yeah, if it doesn't cost any money or if it doesn't create extra work for other people, then yes, you can do it. So that's what I did. And that's literally why I think that is a big reason why I have the career that I have now is the fact that I was able to create a reel from, you know, such a young age and get that experience in. And it was really cool. And it's something that still exists today, which is awesome. Really it's giving cool. opportunities to other people.
I think I love that story for so many reasons. And I mean, way to just, you have to speak it into existence. Like he helped you with your career goals and here we are. And when you talk about the mentorship aspect and passing it on, now that exists and the number of people who I know benefit. Because when I was at BC, we had a, you know, I was an English major and I took some communications classes, but there wasn't for as, you know, where Boston is located and you think of they're in this big media market. I would say that having more student reporter opportunities, like when I was there, at least there weren't that, there just wasn't that many. So
there were none when I was there. And I was like, this feels wrong. I wanted to fix it.
So yeah. That's awesome. Okay. You mentioned your mom. So I think we should go there next. I got to meet Debbie briefly with your dad. They were both like the most delightful human beings. I think it was a Cal or Stanford game many years ago.
Yeah,
and I was like, of course, of course, Molly McGrath came from these two incredible human beings, but she's a retired cardiac nurse. She was the head of her department at SF General. And the question that we always ask is usually some version of like, what do you specifically admire about her? What have you learned from her? Let's give Debbie a little bit of love.
My mom taught me how to work hard. Like, she worked really hard my entire childhood, and we had au pairs and nannies and people who helped raise us. And when I look back at my childhood, those people were formative, but I think of my mother. And that, I think, has helped me justify, like, seeking help from others and letting other people help raise my children, because other people helped raise me. And I'm so grateful to my mom for allowing that to happen and for continuing to work hard and make her career a priority, because it taught me hard work. And even when she retired, she is an amazing person where she still works hard. She is constantly has something going on. She's like a part of a women's golf league, and she sometimes volunteers as a hospice nurse and like helps people pass on during like their toughest moments. And she cares for my dad who is sick, and like, she's the most selfless person. Like, the one word that comes to mind when I think of my mom is selfless. She is so selfless. She has taught me selflessness and grace and just to work really hard. And you can still work really hard and be a good mom, you know? And so I'm very grateful for the example that she showed me. And I think that the example I saw from her is what made me say to myself, okay, no matter what I do, there are two things that I need. I need to be a mom, and I need to have a career that I'm proud of. And those are two things that are important to me. And those were my non-negotiables, like my first date, essentially, with my husband. I was like, just so you know, if this goes somewhere, I'm not going to stop working. And he was like, okay, like, chill. Yeah. You know, and I was like, if we have kids, like, don't ask me to stop working. So like, it was that example from my mom, which was cool to have.
I freaking love that, Molly. And I will just say that you mentioned that she's got so much going on and that her schedule is full, even though she's a retired nurse. And I will say it was easier to figure out your schedule than it was to figure out her schedule so that she could also.
No! Hi, Mom.
Hi, baby.
How did you do this? I'm going to
cry. I crept in without anybody knowing.
I had no idea. Oh my gosh.
You didn't know she was going to be on.
About you.
Oh, that's, oh, I know. I've got tears coming down. It is me. I know. I am so nervous. I'm not a public speaker. Molly got all of that in her DNA from her father, not from me. I'm more of a one-on-one person.
That's always been amazing, Mom.
But it's great to see Lisa. Lisa, I admire you. I follow you and Christian. Okay. And Ashley, when I talked to you the other day, it was like talking to a girlfriend. I mean, I think she had to say, okay, I have to go. I have to go. I said, but wait, there's more.
It was the opposite. So I kept saying one last thing. Sorry. I just have one more thing. We talked for like 45 minutes. It was wonderful. And I just want to say, Debbie, I hope that you were able to hear everything that Molly just said about you, because I'm sure she's articulated that in some way over the years, but I know also what this podcast has taught me is that the power of hearing somebody say those words to somebody else is really special. So hopefully, were you able to hear all of that? Or should we have her say it again?
Yeah.
No. You know, I recently had a 70th birthday with my husband. Oh, wow. We went to Scottsdale. And in our family, you give a roast. And I have seven brothers and sisters, and I've got like 250 nephews and nieces and cousins, but I only wanted Molly and Patrick to say something. And every time, it's so much from the heart. It just levitated me. I'm still levitating from that whole experience, because not only is Molly sincere and smart and kind, she's great to party with too. we had a great time in Arizona, and it was so much fun. So I know how much she admires and respects me as I do her.
That's so sweet. And just one thing, like, I speak publicly for a living, right? Like, I speak in front of millions of people on TV, and for example, the draft, my mic was open to the house in front of 275,000 people who were like yelling and screaming. And I wasn't nervous because I was like, oh, whatever, no big deal. I was so nervous for that speech at my mom's 70th. Like I was like shaking and like not talking to anyone beforehand. And I told Max, I was like, why, my husband, I said, why am I so nervous for this? That was definitely like the most nervous I felt speaking in front of people in a long time, because it really mattered to me. Not that my job doesn't matter to me, but like the depth of what I said, I wanted it to have like an impact. And so it's just so funny how like in a small room in front of the people you love the most, that makes you more nervous than like a crowd of hundreds of thousands of people. It's
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It makes all the sense in the world though, because it matters. Those words matter so much, and it's so deeply personal and meaningful to you. I just got to say, I'm so glad that we made this happen. I love seeing the two of you on a screen together. And I'm just going to suggest you guys should probably start your own podcast, because I think you could really, in all your spare time.
Yeah.
Oh. High-fiving.
What was Molly like as a kid, Debbie?
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. My Molly doll.
I was a nightmare.
No. So this is an interesting story. When I met my husband, I was working at Stanford and he was a medical student. And we went on our first date, which was on my birthday in March. And he goes, well, so you know, if my first daughter is going to be Molly McGrath. And I said, where did that come from? So this true story, a nurse that was 4 years ahead of me at USF, her name was Maureen O'Hara. I don't know. That's an old time star, Molly. I don't know if you know. And she says, Michael, if you have a girl, you have to name her Molly McGrath. So that was done. That's how Molly got her name, from an oncology nurse at Stanford from a million years ago. And what was she like as a child? Oh, gosh, she was my delight. She was so beautiful as a baby. I had the pink room and I dressed her up, and I hated leaving her when I had to go back to work. But she was one, so many things, but she was so determined. And she thought she was all that from the very beginning. So her dad is a voracious reader. He loves to read, and he'd leave his books all around, but he would also travel for scientific conferences. So Molly insisted on having one of his books in the crib with her. She was probably not even 1 year old. And I go in and she has the book upside down with her little leg crossed akimbo. And she's back like this, reading the book, like she's like, that's going to bring her closer to dad. That was the beginning of her love of reading. But another memory, when Molly was in fifth grade, oh, she never forgave me. I don't think we decided to stop, and we took the family, and Michael was on a sabbatical, and we went to Heidelberg, Germany, which is just the most, it's like a storytale town.
We and, moved there.
Yeah, we moved.
We didn't
there.
Just go there for vacation.
No.
We moved there.
Yeah, the Mönchberg Steige 3, you know, the name of the street. Molly was in, we were going to put her in the main schools in Germany. I said, we're only going to be here a year. So we put her in a Department of Defense schools, which was so lovely, because Molly learned not only to respect the men and women in military, but also the children, the families. And she would come home so sad because so-and-so daddy is going to be deployed. I mean, she really had a sense of what our military does for us. But what also happened is that we were able to join a swim team that traveled throughout Europe. And Molly is a good swimmer. She was fast. And we were in Rota, Spain, and it was boys and girls together, right? She saw this little boy next to her. They were both in the lead, and he was, you know, he was approaching and getting in front of her. And she said, no, not now and not ever. I am going to win. And so she just, she sped up and off she went, and she won that heat. So that's the first indication of who is this child and where did she get that from?
She's got a competitive nature. Love it.
She's got a competitive nature. Absolutely.
I love that. But I love that. Well, and now
track down the coaches after the game. I saw clips of her running in heels to track down the coaches. That's pretty fast. It's pretty impressive.
I know. and in heels. Yeah.
I just love this so much. I got to say, Molly, is there anything that you, I felt like when I became a mom, I had such a deeper appreciation for my own mom. Lisa and I have talked about this, like, until you become, I'm like, oh, that's how much you love me. Like, that's how much you care. Like, oh shoot. Yeah. I didn't. Okay. This changes things, but just the, you know, it's a giving of yourself to somebody else and this little human that can't give you anything back for a very long time. What did your relationship with your mom change at all? Or did you come to appreciate her in a different way when you became a mom?
Absolutely. I think, excuse my French, I was like a little shit for some of my childhood and, you know, being a teenager. And, I didn't realize everything that went into being a wonderful parent. And when I had kids and right after I had my first kid, I remember thinking, oh my gosh, my parents love me so much. And it makes you realize how much they love you because you are able to experience that love with your own children. And yeah, it's definitely brought us closer because there's nothing like being a part of this sorority, you know, of being a mom. It now, rather than you being my mom, it's like, you're my friend, you're my peer. We're both mothers. And we're both mothers together and like learning through motherhood together. And there's so much that I'm still learning. And I think my mom is able to like relive some things through me and my children. So it creates like another layer and depth to a mother-daughter relationship to have children and to be a mom and just want to be a good mom and raise my children the way that I was raised, which is, you know, the best thing ever.
I was contemplating what I was going to say. I meditated, I do yoga and I'm just thinking, and I realized that, here come the tears, but you know, the mother child relationship, it evolves, it changes as one gets younger and older. And what I realized is that Molly and my son, Patrick, are my heroes because they are kind, because of how hard they work. I might have been a hero figure or role model to Molly, but now I see her as the mother that she is and the kick-ass sideline reporter that she is. I love watching her on TV. I'm always like close. I get close, like, what is she wearing? What's she doing? But it really is. She is a role model to me about how to be strong, how to be confident and how to believe in yourself and your self-worth and to reach for your goals. To tell that athletic director, I have goals and you're going to help me get them. I love it.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have been that way, Mom, if it weren't for you.
No.
It's true. I wouldn't have been that way if it weren't for you. And Max and I talk about this a lot because he's like, what did your parents do to make you this way? And I'm like, I don't know, you know, because he's like, because we always talk about wanting to raise our children to be determined and respectful. And we're like, what's the secret sauce? How do we raise our kids? And I think a big part of it is the way that I was raised and the expectations that my parents had for it was expectations and example, a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. Like you guys always had high expectations for me. You know, my education was always first and foremost and to try hard and do the best that I could and everything that I did. But also you and Dad were both wonderful examples of hard workers too. So I saw it on both sides. Like you practiced what you preached. So I think that was a big reason why I am who I am.
And I love who you are.
I love who you are.
Oh, I'm going to have the tears going over here in a minute too. This is awesome. You two are wonderful. And it is so beautiful. You both describe it so beautifully. This notion of a mother and a child and how the child is like looking up at the mother. And then all of a sudden at some point it does go like this. And I think, you know, you can both admire and appreciate and really understand each other. And I feel like as I've become to have an adult relationship with my mom and I'm not just, you know, her daughter, that I also was a total shit, Molly. We can have my mom on sometime and you can ask her all these questions and she'll vouch for that. Determined, I think is another word that maybe is a kinder word of what I was, but you come to have this love and respect. And now that I have kids of my own, I hope that it is the same thing. And you hope that you're giving them what your parents gave you. And I think it all comes down to what you said, Molly, it's like radical expectations and radical love. You have high standards and you have all of the love in the world. And those two things together allow, and the accompanied with the example of how to be and how to do it and how to show up in the world, that is what allows, you know, these little souls to develop into whoever they're going to develop into, because they're going to be their own people. Lisa's got four of them and they're all very different. I look at mine all the time and I'm like, how are you the same gene pool? Like, you guys are so different.
But all you want is your kids to evolve and be better than you. I swear, yeah. I want them to like just evolve and, yes, you know, all the good and run with it and just be better. Yes. And, you know, that's what you just want. And then, you know, you're hard on them and you know, you're strict, but then you have grandkids and you just spoil the grandkids.
Exactly.
I thank you both so much for joining us and coming on. This has been a total delight. Molly, you know how much I love you. Debbie, I've got your phone number now, so just get ready. Keep calling you.
You want more info.
I missed like two meetings because I'm like, I have so many more things that I loved hearing about Molly and love getting to know you. But happy Mother's Day to all three of you.
Happy Mother's Day to you guys.
Guys, you're inspiration.
Mother's Day, Molly.
I know.
And so this is how Molly is sending me away to Pebble Beach for a three golf courses, 2 days for Mother's Day.
I hope my mom isn't listening to this.
Yeah, can you call my
it's for your 70th. It's not for Mother's Day. It's for your 70th.
But I am Are you going?
Yeah.
I'm going on Mother's Day. Mother's Day.
Oh, how awesome is that?
That's so special. Molly, you won. You won,
Molly. You win. That's amazing. Sure. You won the mom lottery. Debbie, you won the daughter lottery. That's amazing. Yeah. Enjoy Pebble Beach. I know you're off to a golf outing right now, so thanks for making the time.
I've got to go to a tournament right now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. She was like, well, it works in with my golf schedule. I think I can join you guys. So
She's always busy. Little busy Deb. That's her Instagram, busy Deb.
All right. I love you all. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you, guys.
Happy Mother's Day.
So good to talk to you guys.